You must be out of your goddamn mind. Joe Louis, the greatest boxer ever lived. I'll be with you boys in a minute. He was bad in Chester Clay. He bad in Sugar Ray. He bad in that. Who that? You, the new boy they got, Mike Tyson. Look like a bulldog. He bad in him, too. He done whipped Mike Tyson's ass. He whipped all their ass.
What about Rocky Marciano?
Oh, there it go. There they go. Every time I start talking about boxing, a white man got to pull Rocky Marciano out their ass. That's the one. That's the one. Rocky Marciano. Rocky Marciano. Let me tell you something once and for all. Rocky Marciano was good. But compared to Joe Louis, Rocky Marciano ain't shit.
He beat Joe Louis's ass.
That's right. He did whoop Joe Louis' ass.
Joe Louis was 75 years old when he fought.
I don't know how old he was, but he got an ass whooped.
Joe Louis had come out of retirement to fight Rocky Marciano. The man was 76 years old.
A lot of moving parts in the world of Texas football. The Texas Longhorns included. We're going to talk about the incredible rap, aided by exterior events, but they took advantage of it. They signed a great recruiting class after NSD1. There's still some guys yet to be inked for NSD2. Of course, we're going to talk about other big classes, surprises that we saw. Obviously, A&M had a banner early signing period. Stan Drayton, Texas is going to be hiring a new running backs coach. We got Urban Meyer getting fired after 11 months. And then, of course, Casey Thompson back in the portal. I think he should have joined the rewards program. He's staying in the El Portal Motel so often. So what do we want to start off with? And I guess we'll start with recruiting, man. Let's start with the burn orange Kool-Aid.
Yeah, so we said it. You go 5-7, you have no momentum, and you're kind of the joke of – one of the jokes of the college football world. I think Nebraska is the biggest one. But the fact that you can turn that around and flip those guys, as we said, it was a perfect storm. So you've got NIL, and you've got Texas actually doing something with it and being aggressive, which is so nice, to go with the coaching carousel and all these moving parts. And at 5-7 – with no positive momentum, you usually don't turn that up. So you could be 5-7 and you win your last four games, or you could be 6-5 like Bob Stoops in 99, and you can kind of see where recruits are looking at it but and thinking, oh, this is a spot that's turning around. But to pull a top-five class, Paul, we'll get to A&M here in a second. What A&M did was fantastic, but you got to separate what your neighbor's doing and the shit show in your house, the fact that you've turned some stuff around.
There's a reason one of the seven deadly sins in Catholicism is envy. There's a reason one of the top 10, the number 10 commandment, I think, is thou shalt not covet.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're eating well and you're doing well, don't worry so much about your neighbor, right?
Right.
And that's, we will talk about A&M. We're going to talk about some other schools that had great signing days and what that might mean, what the implications are. But Texas, to close it out, I mean, the last 2 weeks, they steal banner headline recruits from Oregon, Michigan, Ohio State, Oklahoma. Texas gets guys to pick them over Alabama. I mean, it was an amazing ending. And yes, every possible outside event that could have happened that was a positive for Texas happened. Lincoln Riley goes to USC. Oregon is devastated. LSU in turmoil. Obviously, Brian Kelly, a very good coach, and if he can fit culturally, he has a chance to turn it around. But you had this, you know, even Ohio State lost some of its luster, right, when Michigan beat their ass. All these things happen that are positive for Texas, and to their credit, Steve Sarkisian and his staff took advantage of it, because with that effort in combination with NIL, of course, they get the transfer from Quinn Ewers from Ohio State. They turn Terrence Brooks, the highly rated cornerback from Ohio State. They get Kelvin Banks from Oregon. We can go on and on. They turn all these elite recruits late and just finished with a flurry. And it was absolutely great. We're going to break down the entire class sort of guy by guy individually when all of the hay is in the barn after NSD2. That's February 3rd, I believe. We'll do that. But for now, from a top line perspective, Kevin, my take is Texas kicked ass on offensive line.
Yep.
Defensive line.
Yep.
Quarterback, if you want to include Quinn Ewers as sort of part of this class. And if you do those three things in college football, it's hard to suck.
It really is. I'm a little surprised. I mean, Evan Stewart picks A&M, that there maybe weren't more receivers in this class, but one of the problems with the Texas classes, and I've gone through it, I'm sure you have too, I'm sure a lot of people listening have. If you're really bored today, tomorrow, whenever, you got a little time, go through the last 20 years of the Texas classes and look at the four and especially five-star offensive linemen and then think about what they did at Texas. Texas would have really shiny, cool classes or highly acclaimed classes, but those guys on the line really wouldn't – just didn't develop or they didn't turn into the five-star that you thought coming out of high school. And the hope here is that Kyle Flood and the coaching staff can develop both lines of scrimmage. But the fact that they went and hit that, I mean, this is equivalent to what's the biggest issue you have. We'll talk about David McClellan later on. What's your biggest issue financially, right? And you go and hit that, and you go and hit that right away. And you don't pussyfoot and try and do other things and avoid the problem. That is the problem. And they attacked it with numbers. And if they end up getting DJ Campbell, I mean, this could be a seven-guy offensive line class. And I think we finally have an offensive line coach who can really coach these guys up. I love the fact that they hit that. They hit it with numbers. And I think some of the skill guys, especially with the transfer portal, that'll come in due time. One thing Sark did show this year with Xavier Worthy is that we're going to get receivers eventually.
The beauty of receiver, and look, Texas only signed one receiver. That's ridiculous. But if there's a position that I want to undersign, and I don't want to undersign any position, but it would be wide receiver. Because as you and I have discussed, whether it's the NFL draft or high school recruiting, competent to good wide receivers are a dime a dozen.
Yeah.
And if you can't find these guys in the transfer portal, and I don't mean potential guys, I mean proven starters, some of them who may even have led their team in receiving last year, if you can't go find some of those guys and make a case to them as Steve Sarkisian with your offense, with Xavier Worthy, you know, taking the top off of coverage, if you can't do that, I don't know what you're able to pitch as a program. I feel like Texas can address that deficiency. Linebacker?
Hey, quickly, if you can't address that at wide receiver and you're Sark, it's just not going to work. So, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. So I got to think that Texas is going to be able to go find some proven starters.
Agreed.
Who can go out, run a route, and catch a football.
Yeah, and he can scheme them up, and hopefully you've got an arm now to actually hit that. But get back to linebacker. What were you talking about there?
Linebacker, you know, you would think that you can find some quality guys there as well. You know, those guys do move around. The truth is, if we look back retrospectively at Steve Sarkisian's first year with the portal, we didn't do a very good job.
No, we didn't. There were a lot of misevaluations, and they tried to hit numbers with edge and linebackers, and they just ended up bringing in bodies and, to some degree, like Oviagofu, one-dimensional guys. And so they're going to have to be better at, once again, evaluating what you have in the spring. Understand schematically what you have to work around. And it's been three coaching staffs in a row that have come in and really not been able to do that. We had Tom Herman a couple nights before saying this is the best offensive line he's ever seen. A couple nights before his first game where they lost to Maryland. Charlie obviously was lost. But this staff, I really didn't expect them because of their credentials. And they've also been dating nothing but tens, a lot of these guys, to recognize that, no, she, or in this case, he, is a four or a five.
One thing that is great about the offensive line, as you said, is the offensive line coach, the potential for development. Strength conditioning, we'll see. I've had my criticisms. We'll see if that gets modified in the offseason. The one thing I would offer is that on the defensive line, Texas has had some similar situations where they've signed really ballyhooed defensive line classes in numbers, right? Charlie Strong famously signed a class with, oh, all these guys and, oh, all these dudes. And you realize very quickly, a lot of them were poor evaluations and poor evaluations, by the way, by the recruiting services too, because in the case of, say, a Trey Allen, who was an offensive lineman, so forgive me for switching, a guy from old school who was rated the number one offensive tackle, I watched him in high school, and I was like, not only is he not a five-star, he's basically a three-star.
Right.
Any guy with a speed rush just runs right around him.
What did you think about Mason Walters, five-star?
Well, so Mason Walters was interesting in that he was an absolutely dominant player in high school, but he was kind of maxed out.
Yes.
And it looks like he just didn't really either get the coaching or just didn't physically have the ability to go to the next level. And so while he stayed the same, everyone else around him got better.
Yeah, no, you're right. Defensive line, I will say this, and I think we saw that especially with this team this year. Charles Aminihu and Joseph Osai, we can go back to Malcolm Brown. I mean, there have at least been some players. The offensive line, the only two guys they've had that have been worth a shit were three stars the last 10 years.
True. You know, what I like about this defensive line class, and you might have some insight, given one of the late signees, Bill Belichick's dream, the lacrosse player, Ethan Burke from Westlake. What I love about this defensive line class is the depth. And the top line quality is good. But even when I look at the guys who are rated near the bottom, right? And I'm saying that with quotes because the ratings are imprecise at best. You're talking about guys like Ethan Burke, the guy from Westlake, Zach Swanson, Aaron Bryant, and Chris Ross from North Shore. Those four guys I put on the film, and I could it doesn't take a lot of imagination to go, oh, I can see how that guy could be not only a starter, but an all-conference level player.
Yeah, and there's some projection there too. So I love Ross. I've been following North Shore, and we'll watch them tonight. I like his motor. I like a lot of things about Ross, and you can project. I haven't seen Bryant as much, and Swanson, I want to get your take on them. I've certainly followed Ethan Burke. Ethan Burke had a Maryland lacrosse scholarship, and the afternoon show I did, it was early September, not to tug myself too hard here, but I'm talking to Rod, and we're talking about projecting and really being able to develop talent. Obviously, that was a big storyline and has been for way too long. Hopefully we can get over that. But I mentioned, I go, man, there's this 6'7", 220-pound, 225-pound lacrosse player, Westlake, and he's got incredibly quick feet. He's got good pad level. He's got a great motor. He's got great instincts. He clearly has a frame you can put weight on. If you can't look at that guy and he's in your backyard and see the potential – and he's playing at the 6A level and dominating underweight, then I've got no hope for us. And the fact that they got in late, you know, it started to build a little bit as he played more this year. He was injured last year, and Westlake is also loaded. He had guys ahead of him too. That's the thing. That's pretty easy. If I can see that, I'm hoping that professionals that are coaching can see that.
That's right, and I do like that Michigan was all over him. I mean, I think Harbaugh has a pretty good eye, and that staff has a pretty good eye. Their issue has been they're not able to close the guys that they want.
Right.
Right?
Especially that position, Paul, because Aiden Hutchinson, David Ajabo, they project pretty well, especially at that position.
Yeah, Aiden Hutchinson, it doesn't take many clips to understand what that dude is capable of, and the thing about Burke that I love, you nailed it. He's got that mobility. It's the concern you always have with a really tall guy is, can he bend?
Mm-hmm.
And he's bendy.
He can, man. He can bend.
And he can bend around the corner. And, you know, the other thing, of course, this is those of you who are used to this being my cry, but I'm going to continue doing it because the evaluators keep screwing it up. If you don't think that you can put weight on a 6'6", 6'7" guy with a decent frame with 4 or 5 years in a college weight room and unlimited access to a meal plan, if you don't think you can make a guy who's 225, 265, or 275, I don't really know how to have a discussion with you about your ability to evaluate talent if that's your knock on the guy.
Yeah.
I don't understand at the basic level if you understand like how football works or how training works or how puberty works or development. I mean, Kevin, how many guys did you and I know just we were friends with in college who were beanpoles? I'm not even talking about like athletes. I'm not even talking about football players. They're beanpoles coming out of high school. And you see them when they're 23 years old as a senior, and they've put on 50 pounds, and they've grown 2 inches.
Yeah.
It's normal. You don't even require a special training. You don't need drugs. Like, people act like getting strong is like this incredibly difficult thing to do. It's the easiest thing to do in the world for an elite athlete. It's not hard.
No, it's not. And people develop differently. And I think the reality is, like you just said, I don't know if it's majority, but a lot of people will grow into that. And as long as you have the frame, then you're good to go.
Yeah, exactly right. Zach Swanson, look, that's a guy I have to admit. I did not think he was a take based on his junior film. I just didn't really see it. Then his senior season comes in and now I see it. I'm not convinced he's a potential superstar, but now I absolutely see the appeal. He's just gotten stronger, faster, plays quicker, great motor. And yeah, I totally get it. I would probably put him at the bottom of our D-line hall, but that's not an insult because I think very highly of that D-line group as a whole. I mean, obviously the Jamon Tapps and Jarray Bledsoes,
right.
Hopefully you don't require much film to understand the appeal of those guys, but Zach Swanson improved himself. I really thought he was not a take as a junior, and now I do think he's a take.
Best case scenario, what can he be? What is his strength?
I think his strength is just being above average at everything.
Okay.
Which is actually a good trait in a football player, right?
I told my ex-girlfriend that, and she's my ex-girlfriend.
That's exactly right. I've built a whole career off of being above average.
Yeah, right.
I think that his strength might be strength, actually. I think it might be a guy who can play strong side defensive end and really set the edge and then provide enough pass rush that you don't feel like you're losing anything with him out on the field. And, that guy's valuable. It's not a very heralded part of your defense. But if you ask Pete Carroll, if you ask different guys who have a very specific crafted defensive system, having a strong side defensive end who can hold the edge, it's actually pretty good, a big deal in modern spread offense.
If you watch Texas at all this year, I'm talking like two quarters, and you don't understand the importance of someone who can set the edge, I can't help you out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Hey, I did think a really important late addition, obviously Kelvin Banks, a huge deal. But Terrence Brooks, the guy from Little Elm, he's a cornerback. He's about 5'11". He has an 80-inch wingspan, really good athleticism, apparently a great work ethic. He was an important steal because it looks like Texas is not going to get Denver Harris. He's going to go to A&M, which is going to add to a bounty of riches that the Aggies are landing in this recruiting cycle. I thought he was a really important late addition. I like the DB class fine. I don't think they're bad or anything. I think they're good. But I thought a true corner was missing, and Terrence Brooks sort of fits that bill.
Totally agree. No, I mean, Terrence Brooks was maybe the most important get. We talked about receiver, but it's even more needed at cornerback and in the secondary. I mean, the last – we've only had really one great corner in recent memory, and that's Holton Hill, and he had his off-the-field stuff. But that's been a serious issue. And so flipping Terrence Brooks and also – just being able to keep Ohio State out a little bit is nice. They've done plenty of damage here the last 5 to 10 years, and it does feel like there's a little flip, a little narrative flip, and definitely Texas A&M's part of that, where both these schools are keeping more of the kids in state.
Yeah, who knew that going 5-7 and 8-4
right,
the key to landing top five recruiting classes?
Right, 8-4 when your fan base, they may lie about it now because that's what they're good at, or at least give a revisionist history, and the national media was saying, hey, this could be a college football playoff team. I mean, both teams underperformed this year. Texas more because you go 5-7, but 8-4 for A&M to pull this off is really damn impressive.
Yeah, well, you know what else is impressive? Our sponsors, and the guy who's been with us from the very start is Gabe Winslow. He's amazing at what he does. He's a mortgage broker. He has 100 different lenders to choose from to find you and craft for you the best individual optimized deal. You can reach him at 832-557-1095 or mortgagesbygabe.com. Here's the deal, man. Some of you are moving and you need a house. You need a mortgage. You need a guy who's going to shoot you straight and not be a slime bag. Not to attack the industry, but it's full of slime bags, FYI. Gabe isn't one of them. He's a great dude, and I cannot tell you how many letters direct messages, texts we've gotten from our listeners saying, I don't even live in Texas and I needed help with my mortgage. Gabe doesn't get a dollar from me. I called him and the guy talked to me for 30 minutes and crafted a plan to help me get the best possible rate from the lender that I am going to use. The guy's freaking awesome. Give him a call, 832-557-1095. You don't have to put a dime or a dollar in his pocket and he's still going to help you out. That's exactly the kind of sponsor that we want. And that's exactly the kind of person, frankly, you should be doing business with, because he's going to get a great deal for you. He's going to look out for you. And whether that's moving to get a new house or refining, look, we got some economic uncertainty ahead of us, and I don't pretend to know the future, but if you've got a bunch of dead money sitting in your house, there might be a very good reason to take some of that money out, put it to work, put it in a nest egg, do some things with it in terms of conversions. And we have another sponsor who could help you with that if you want to do some IRA tomfoolery. But there's some stuff you can do with that dead money that could be very productive. Maybe you want to start a small business. Gabe has amazing and creative solutions to solve a lot of those financial problems using your house. So give him a call, 832-557-1095. Kevin, I promise we are going to go sort of guy by guy once we've signed the entire class. But we still got two guys out there that I think are realistic. And that's Ernest Green, which is kind of a surprise, but he is the big offensive lineman from St. John Bosco in California. If you have not seen his film, he's a complete badass. And then there's Devon Campbell, who is the prize recruit in the state of Texas. He's a top five recruit by most services. He's a Texas versus OU battle. Mr. Green is a Texas versus Georgia battle. The smart money says Green is probably going to go with Georgia. And the smart money right now says that Devon Campbell is going to probably go with Texas.
Yeah, how about that pancake factory, huh? Nothing like staying home whenever you get 150. And Campbell and Kelvin Banks, you know, the reality is we've talked about the lack of luxuries for this program and this coaching staff, and I think that Sark hopefully has his head around that. I think that he knew that to some degree, but not to the degree that it actually is, where, man, I got to get out of my own box and really, really just work with what I have. The reality is both Campbell and Banks probably start next year, even though you would like them not to.
Yeah, we're going to see. We're going to see how the portal goes.
True.
We're going to see.
We talked about that last week.
We'll see how some offseason development happens. I think one of the two probably starts eventually. I think you're right.
Yeah, and the portal's big. I mean, you can talk about development. I'm not sure what they have on campus that – we'll see how good Banks and Campbell are if Campbell comes. But the portal would be the biggest thing. And we talked about it a little bit last week. Just because you landed this, try and hit the portal with the offensive line. What other spot would you really want to hit the portal with?
Anything. Almost any of it.
Anything but running back, right?
Yeah, I mean, running back's not a priority.
I understand that, but we only have so many spots. So what would you how would you prioritize it?
They've got to hit the offensive line. They've got to hit tight end now with Jared Wiley transferring out. You know what? Tight end may not be as big a deal unless they can get someone who's an absolute stud. Because I have heard good things about Gunnar Helm. They think he could be a pretty useful guy. And then Jatavion Sanders obviously has some untapped potential. So we'll actually hold on that one.
Yeah.
But they got to go get some wide receivers. They've got to get some starter level FBS wide receivers. They got to hit some starters for the offensive line. And then defense, you know, they need to go get some corners probably. And they're already looks to be on the ball in that respect. So, yeah, I think they're going to do a better job at the portal this year than last year.
I hope so.
I hope so. Yeah, that's exactly right. Hey, Texas A&M. They're probably going to finish with the number one class in America. That's unprecedented. That's never happened at Texas A&M before. Look, not to be too simplistic, but a lot of people credit Texas doing it with NIL. What do we credit Texas A&M doing it with? Because their NIL has not been as developed.
It hasn't been, but I'm sure a lot of it's under the table. And I'm not trying to say that A&M's the only one doing that, obviously. We've talked about that on this podcast a lot, but I think that's a lot of it. I also think there's a vacuum. And so the fact that, you know, Texas is 5-7 and you've got all this turnover in the state of Texas. I'll give them credit. They also have some really damn good recruiters. But, yeah, there's other stuff going on, and they're not the only one.
Just like an Aggies carpet, nature abhors a vacuum. Alabama and Georgia, old familiar. They're going to always be in the top three, seemingly.
Speaking of under the table.
Yeah. Notre Dame actually finished strong. No five stars, but just a shitload of four stars from across the country.
Yeah, and look, what Notre Dame's done really good the last 5-10 years, and really 5 years, is evaluate well and evaluate guys that work in your scheme and then be able to utilize their talent and also obviously really develop. So they're kind of rolling down that same path here. I love what Marcus Freeman's doing. I think Marcus Freeman, if Notre Dame's ever going to really take that final last step to win a national championship, it's probably going to be with a coach like Marcus Freeman. Not saying he will, but he's a dynamic recruiter. He's got a pretty dynamic staff, and you got to sell Notre Dame because there's a lot of shit that goes with that.
Just as Texas and Texas A&M were beneficiaries of all the coaching instability, I think Notre Dame was a quiet beneficiary.
Agreed.
On a national level. Yep. Because they pick up a guy here and there because of that instability.
Totally agree. And they recruit nationally, but as you know, they fit California really hard, and that vacuum is probably going to close here a little bit. I know Lincoln didn't have a great class. He didn't have time to really flip this year, but he's got some stuff set up for next year, and I think a lot of people that have been poaching out of California, there are tons of kids, so you can still poach. USC can only take 25, but those really elite guys, that at some point is not going to come to a close, but it's going to change a little bit.
Hey, are we surprised that North Carolina, despite a disappointing season on the field, they finished ninth, and they signed a couple of five stars. Mac Brown, say what you will.
Yeah.
That freaking guy can weave a tail on the recruiting trail.
He can sell a condom to a nun.
I love it.
No, he really can. I mean, Mac is like...
You should have said a dental dam.
Mac is, you know, Mac has some flaws like any coach does, but man, that guy can just flat out recruit.
Here's another guy who can flat out recruit that's never talked about. Mark Stoops at Kentucky. They finish with the 12th ranked class after NSD1.
Yeah, when I was going through that they've been good on the field, but the fact that Kentucky, of all programs, is, and I see him at least 24/7 composite at 11. Definitely check out Inside Texas. Missouri at Missouri's up there too, which was a little surprising.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. Hey, we'd be remiss if we didn't cover the amazing thing that Primetime did on National Signing Day.
Wow.
He got in the head of the number one recruit in the country. His name is Travis Hunter. He's a cornerback and wide receiver. He's an incredible football player. Primetime, who is a coach at Jackson State, an HBCU, gets in his head and gets him to commit at a national press conference with Florida State, thinking that they're signing them. The Florida State program basically implodes, all their fans melt down. And a lot of people think this is revenge from Deion Sanders for not being in the running for the Florida State head coach football job. And it's a little thumbing of the nose from Prime to his old alma mater. And I think it's pretty amazing that a HBCU just signed the number one recruit in the country.
Yeah, it is. And I don't think that's a trend. I don't think we're going to, you know, see that really hit a spot where all of a sudden a bunch of these guys are going to HBCU. But I don't think there's any question. I mean, Deion was pissed that he was not in the running. It's funny, he flips him from his alma mater. And that was the day before they gave Norvell an extension. Did you see that?
I did. Probably predicated on part on his assurance that he was landing Travis Hunter, the number one recruit in the country.
Right, that there's some momentum. We got the number one guy. We're actually turning this in the right direction. Florida State still had a pretty good class. Clemson, what's your take on Clemson? So they have to replace their OC. You know, Jeff Scott left for South Florida a couple years ago. The alignment, hate to use that term, Texas fans, has been remarkable for Dabo Swinney in a program like that. Venables had been there. Tony Elliott Elliott takes the Virginia job. Venables has gone to Oklahoma, and they hire within. Quarterback coach will be the OC. They got two co-DCs, guys that were in-house for a long time. This is going to be a weird transition point. We're gonna see if this is 2010 for Clemson and not that it'll go downhill that much, or if they can actually get it back to where there were three schools and they were one of them.
Well, they've always had a different recruiting model.
They have.
Because they've always signed small classes because they have a program built on retention and development. They don't give up on guys. And that is – they're the antimatter to the Alabama model, which is you sign a full class, you get a bunch of five stars and four stars, you put in some Darwinian competition, and if they want to transfer, there's the freaking door. Beat it.
Right, and you offer 111 guys per class.
Absolutely. Clemson, they've always gone about it in a different way. You know, as we've seen, when they don't hit on the quarterback, that whole thing sort of unravels.
Yeah, it does. Did you hear Dabo bitching about NIL and everything? Which I find it so funny, some of these people. I'll give Jimbo a lot of credit. He was on Feinbaum, and he said, look, this stuff's been going on forever, and it's been going on under the table, so don't be naive. Am I supposed to think that Clemson turned all that around without some heavy cheating?
Well, the best was the old Longhorn defensive coordinator, Gene Chizik, who coached at Auburn.
Oh, God.
During his tenure, was the dirtiest program in the country. And, Auburn, multiple occasions when new coaches have come to Auburn, I'm not just reporting innuendo here, when new coaches have come to Auburn, they're handed a roster with the salaries saying, hey, this is what we're paying these guys.
Yeah.
And I remember a hilarious anecdote. I don't remember what Auburn coach it was who said, yeah, I got that. They handed me the roster list with who's being paid what. And he said, the most distressing thing wasn't that we were paying players. It's that all the guys we were paying the most were shitty.
I think it was Terry Bowden.
I think that was Terry Bowden.
No, I mean, I remember that. Yeah. No, he got that list and he's like, why are we paying this guy this? I understand Cam Newton getting $700K, but this guy?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I mean, look, NIL is going to change everything, and some of it for good, and frankly, some of it for real bad. And we haven't gone down the second and third downstream effects. There's going to be orders of magnitude of how this affects college football, and it's going to professionalize it. That's it. We're going to stop talking about these guys as kids.
Yes.
Okay. We're going to stop talking about student athletes. These guys are in the pro minor leagues under the auspices of a college. That's it.
No doubt. And there are a lot of positives that come with that. I think to some degree, a lot of us, including you and I, thought this was needed. If this is the degree, maybe we're going a little too far. There may need to be guardrails, and the pendulum maybe needs to swing towards a more normal level. But let's also – so the positives are these kids are going to actually be getting some money on money that they're making for the school. But the professionalized aspect of it, too, is I don't want to hear that they're kids anymore and that you don't get on a college kid. No, they're getting paid. This is big time.
Well, and also, people, you saw this with this recruiting class. Texas processed out a couple of guys.
Yeah.
Okay. Anthony Jones, the edge player from Las Vegas, he signed with Oregon, so he found a good landing spot. But he's processed out. Let's just say what it was. And people bemoan that. I don't like this. Well, this is the new normal. This is just how it's going to be. So deal with it.
Totally agree.
Hey, you. Hey, little trivia question for you.
Shoot.
Jackson State, their big rival is, I believe, Alcorn State. Do you know what the game they play is called?
No.
The Soul Bowl.
Is it really?
Yeah, the Soul Bowl. Such a vestige of the 70s, right?
Oh, God. That is fantastic, man. I would love if they had Soul Glow there, and they're passing it out.
Just let your soul glow. That's, you know, I have to say, Kevin, you have seen 14 movies. I think one of them is Coming to America.
I've seen it a million times. It's one of the funniest comedies out there.
It's so amazing. It's such a great movie. It's, people forget like what a bad MF-er Eddie Murphy is.
Oh my
and
God.
Was
Eddie Murphy dominated the 80s more than Coke did.
Yes. And he left us better for it.
Yes, he did, without a doubt.
I hate to be the old here. If you're a youngster and you've not seen him Coming to America,
oh,
holy, it's so funny. And you know what's crazy about it, Kevin? I've seen comments on Twitter of like, oh, the racialism of Coming to America is jarring.
What?
And I'm like, it's such a funny movie. And it's just so real. The black barbershop with the old men and, you know, when Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall all dressed up as old, don't give a F black dudes talking noise in the barbershop. It's some of the funniest thing ever. It's some of the funniest stuff ever put on film.
With the old Queens Jewish guy?
Yes, the old Queens Jewish guy.
Who is Eddie Murphy?
We called Muhammad. God damn it. This is America. We will call him Muhammad.
It's so good.
I'm going to call him Clay.
Whenever he cuts his tail off, his ponytail, or his, he just kind of looks at it, then throws it behind his back. I mean, that movie is, he was in some great ones. Beverly Hills Cop, Trading Places is probably number two for me. 48 Hours. I mean, that guy just kicked ass in the 80s, and he's been sitting on it since.
He's a bad man. All right. Another bad man for the University of Texas, at least insofar as he got Bijan Robinson. Stan Drayton. Stan is heading on to greener pastures, head coach at Temple. Texas needs a running back coach. And is this a huge loss, or is Texas actually going to potentially exploit this into maybe getting a little better in terms of recruiting?
Maybe. I mean, when Stan recruited, he hit, and he hit really well. So it's going to be a loss there. Maybe more volume recruiter. And good for Stan. You know, being a running back coach is 98% about recruiting. I mean, there are some technical things you can teach, but it's about getting the Jimmy and the Joes there. And the man did that.
Yeah, here's the coaching for running backs coach. Multiple points of contact. And when you pass block, pick up inside out.
Yeah.
You're done.
Yeah, right. And then maybe and occasionally, hey, it's loose, high and tight.
Exactly right. Or if the guy's in the flat and drops it, you yell at him, catch the ball, son.
Yeah. Keep your eyes on the ball.
Yeah, listen, it's the least coached position on the football field. That's just reality. Not to say there isn't any coaching, but it's the least coached. You're either a running back or you're not. And Stan obviously did a good job as a coach. I would say on the recruiting part, when he hit big, but he actually didn't hit that often.
Right.
Texas.
That's why I said volume.
Texas finished second in a lot of big recruitments. And what we often found was that Drayton didn't have a backup plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, and also he was solely focused on running back. I think there's a potential here for getting a real rainmaker who can help on multiple recruitments. So for example, Jeff Banks, people might say, oh, well, you know, he just recruits tight ends. No. Jeff Banks is the secondary recruiter on almost every major recruit that Texas signed.
Yeah. No, and that's kind of the volume I'm talking about with the volume recruiting. It's not so much bringing in more running backs. It's having a guy who can go help out with different stuff. So I would go get a rainmaker. Do you have a name in mind?
No, there's a lot of stuff being floated around. I've heard Tashard Choice. You remember that old dude from the Cowboys, Georgia Tech?
Georgia Tech. I do remember Tashard.
He's supposed to be sort of a young up-and-comer. There's a lot of different things thrown out there. Eternally, T. Martin is obligatory. His name has to be thrown out at every position coaching search ever done in the history of man. But yeah, I think they're just throwing out a bunch of names right now. And yeah, the hope is that you find someone who's a big value add as a recruiter and a good chemistry fit. Yeah, I think, you know, best of luck to Stan. Temple's a good job if you can get everything aligned there and get some guys in Pennsylvania to stay home.
Yeah, he's got the Arthur Johnson connection, and so that made sense, and he finally, you know, get a little payday, win as much as you can there, and you'll be good to go, and he can always go back to being a running back coach. Here's a name we could maybe hire. What about Urban Meyer's running backs coach?
Oh, I love it. Well, you know, if you want a lesson in life, leadership, and morals and ethics, he's got a book on Amazon called Above the Line, Lessons in Life and Leadership.
Jesus, man.
You could go buy it right now. And yeah, so 11 months into his tenure in Jacksonville, he gets shit canned, deservedly so. I mean, it was a circus from the start. And, you know, there's a blatant sort of blanket attack on him as a college coach who failed. And there's something to that, because the fact is, in college, you can hide behind your recruits and your talent. But it was more than that. It has to do with his arrogance. And Urban Meyer didn't sufficiently humble himself to understand that the NFL game is not a game. It's a bunch of grown men who are fighting every year to keep their job in one of the most elite, highly paid professions on the earth. And these guys will accept coaching if you're making them better, but they're not going to accept a bunch of hairy high school bullshit, which is Urban Meyer's thing.
You nailed it. That's exactly it. It's amazing how many college coaches still take their ego in things that worked for them in college and don't adjust it. Most things in life, you and I have done different things and kind of dipped into different industries. Usually you want to take your strengths and build on those and adjust those to whatever you're doing in life, right? But you still want to have the core principles and whatever strengths you have. Take that and then be able to mold it to whatever you're doing. I would tell almost every college coach, because Jim Harbaugh is the only one who's really, really won. Jimmy Johnson back in the day, I get that. But recently, Harbaugh's the only one, the best college coach of all time, had that same issue in Nick Saban when he went there. And he's stepped over a guy who's having seizures and completely lost the locker room. In fact, where there were a couple guys that wanted to beat the hell out of him, including Zach Thomas, where people had to step in. I would tell most college coaches, don't be you. I'm going to go against the grain here. I'm going to give opposite advice that I would give to any other human being and say, hey, build on your strengths. You still be you. And just be able to mold that into whatever you're doing now. No, if you're that type of guy, go the opposite direction, which is why I would have a tough time if I'm an NFL team hiring a college coach.
There's an authoritarian model to the college game, which is about to change, by the way, because of the portal, because of NIL. But there was a historical authoritarian model that worked at the college level, because you kind of own these guys, right? You're a free agent, but you own these dudes for 4 years. And it just doesn't work that way. You can also build up these massive inequities in talent.
Yeah.
Right? Urban Meyer was built on great recruiting at Florida and Ohio State.
Bingo.
And when things didn't go his way, he'd fake, you know, his brain trauma or, you know, whatever the hell he had. And then wait it out and, you know, go talk shit about other coaches on national television and then pop back in when it was convenient for him. NFL doesn't work that way. And either you are a completely decentralized coach in the NFL who doesn't pretend to know football, i.e. McCarthy, Dallas, or you're a guy who can actually help with the damn game plan. Yeah. Now, the highest example of that is Bill Belichick, who can coach every position on the football field and do both coordinator jobs, right? But there's the Cliff Kingsbury's who can say, hey, I'm a creative. It doesn't really matter what my college record was. I'm an outside the box thinker and creative. I'm not an authoritarian. Hey, we're playing San Diego. We're going to have problems with Bosa. Here's the protection I'm thinking. What do you guys think?
Yep.
And you can solve a problem. That's your value as a head coach. And then you're building a culture and you're leading the team and leading by example. Urban Meyer can't solve a problem and he can't build a culture at the NFL level because his culture building is built on bullshit and authoritarian, do it because I said so. And that's not going to fly with a bunch of grown men.
No, it's not. You also see Herman did have a lot of Urban influence. I know those guys, not shockingly, when you get two guys like that, ended up their relationship just went to shit. But the kicker stuff, right? I mean, how Herman wouldn't call the kicker by his name. And then also, you've talked about it, just banging your head against the wall. And that's what Urban was about. We're going to be physically more tough. And schematically, I think we gave him too much credit in his Florida days. At the pro level, you have to be so fluid. You talked about it with Belichick. And that's one thing Jim Harbaugh was really good at. Game plan can change week in and week out. What do you bring there? Because you're not going to have the inequities, like you mentioned, with talent. I mean, think about the worst team. Now, he's on a really bad team this year, but the worst team that you're going to play in the NFL, is that gap is not that wide compared to when you're Florida and you're playing South Carolina,
No question.
Or Ohio State playing Minnesota.
That's exactly right. And you know, the fact is Jacksonville is 2-11 and they're sorry. They're full of all SEC players, right? They're full of college All-Americans. And these guys are 25 and 28 and not 20. And, you know, they're a lot. Every team in the NFL is really two or three players away from being 5-11 versus 11-5.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going to have to change that. We play 17 games now. Holy cow. My whole life I've said, you know, decent team is 10-6. Right. I need to now say 11-6, right?
Yeah, you'll make that adjustment. We're still getting through it first year.
I'm still calling the LA Chargers the San Diego Chargers. So I don't know how quickly that's going to happen.
What about the Redskins?
How dare you? How dare you?
I'll edit that out.
Let's edit it out so we don't get banned off of iTunes. But yeah, I mean, I just think Urban Meyer, it was bad from the start. And the thing I think that actually told me he didn't get it, obviously it's easy to say in retrospect it wasn't going to work after, you know, he's not flying home with the team and feeling up his side piece in a public bar. But before that, when he brought Tim Tebow in as a tight end, and took a potential roster spot from an actual tight end who actually could have made the team and helped improve them.
That started the fire.
I was like, this guy's about bullshit.
Yeah.
And other NFL players see that and they kind of shake their head. And you know, I'm not disparaging Tim Tebow as a person or per se, because I know he's got his acolytes out there, but here's the reality of Tim Tebow right now. He knew he wasn't going to make an NFL team as a tight end. He knew he wasn't going to make a career as a minor league baseball player. His job right now is to be a brand and get in the media, because he stops getting checks from his sponsors the minute his media profile goes down.
He's a circus act.
That's what this is about. And he had no chance to play Major League Baseball. It was a thing to draw attention. A minor league baseball team is more than willing at the AA level to sell extra tickets and put Tebow on their roster, right?
Dude, you know how hard it is? You know how good some of these guys are? The Austin Woods or Randy Boones that listened to us that played minor league baseball at a high level. I still don't think people understand the difference. Like, there was no way he was ever going to play Major League Baseball. That was all promotional.
No. It's all promotional and it's all about Tim Tebow Inc. and his Instagram likes and all that. Urban Meyer decided to help out his old buddy by getting him back in the news cycle. And you could say, well, that's relatively harmless and blah, blah, blah. Hey man, Jacksonville sucks. Every one of those roster spots, even a camp roster spot, is valuable. And when you send that message to your team that you're going to play these little bullshit games, man, that would lose me faster in the locker room than the coach having a side piece. I don't think those players care.
No, because a lot of them have side pieces.
A lot of them have side pieces.
But when you shit on the profession like that, and that's what he did. He went to the NFLPA and took a big dump right outside their door. And that's how those guys look at it. Those guys bust their ass just to get a shot. And they respect people that don't make it, but are still trying. And the fact that Tebow is brought in like that to go with the Iowa strength coach, man, he should actually write another book on how to get fired within a year.
No doubt about that. Hey, we have another transition in the Texas program. And before we talk about that transition, if you are making a transition in your life, I need you to contact Laura Baker, outstanding realtor, Andy Allen team of Keller Williams. She's Austin-based, but she will sell you a house anywhere from North San Antonio all the way up past Temple. And speaking of historically black colleges or black players who didn't actually, I should say, not get the opportunity to play at the elite level because of racism. Do you remember who the greatest defensive tackle of the 1970s from Temple, Texas? You know who that is?
Oh, God. I know this, and I know that
Steel Curtain.
Yeah. Sorry.
Pittsburgh Steelers.
I know. I'm at a point now where it's my brain is literally just frozen. And I've met the guy. I met him at Tyler Campbell's event. Just who is it?
Mean Joe Green.
And actually, don't call him mean, because I talked with Joe Green about that, and I was introducing him at Tyler Campbell's charity event that we do every year for MS. And Joe Green's really good buddies with Earl Campbell. And he said, hey, if you don't mind, you know, just don't say mean Joe Green. Because obviously we know about the Coke commercial and all that. And that was one of those kind of promotional things that really didn't fit the guy. He's one of the nicest guys you'll meet.
I think he evolved into that because my understanding is in high school and early college, he was mean.
Yeah. He may have been, but the Joe Green I met was a sweetheart.
Well, someone else that's a sweetheart is Laura Baker. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. Look, this isn't, there's no bells and whistles to this. She's a great realtor. The Pareto principle, the 80-20 principle in realty, it's real. 20% do 80% of the business, and you want to do business with the 20% because they're the people that are on it. They're the people that are networked. There's the people that go out and bust their ass and hustle. And there's some other realtors who may not be bringing those attributes to the game. You want to hire right for what is one of the largest financial decisions that you'll make in your life. Contact Laura at 512-784-0505, and she can help you. And while you're waiting to move into your new house or build a house, maybe you're going to check into a hotel, maybe a Marriott Residence Inn or the El Portal Motel, where we found many Texas players as Sark has been having conversations with them about their future at Texas. Casey Thompson, third time's a charm, Kevin. Is he now, third time now, going to finally transfer out of Texas?
Yeah, I think he will. I think we knew that one, if not both guys, Casey Thompson and Hudson Carb, were going to transfer. I'm not surprised it's Casey Thompson. He's got limited time left, and hopefully he'll go find a good landing spot.
I agree. I wish Casey well. I will say that you and I have been pretty clear-eyed about this from the start, right? We've always said it might be Casey's the guy, might be Hudson's the guy, might be neither is the guy, might be that both are the guy, right? What is interesting is you had a weird cult build up around both, mostly Casey, prompted and fueled by the media with some weird, like, disinformation about how, you know, not even a young Quentin Tarantino has watched as much film as Casey Thompson. And, you know, the locker room is all squarely behind him and just stuff that they basically conjured from nowhere as some sort of weird narrative. I don't know why or what it's about. I have no problem with Casey.
It's white guilt.
I do have a problem with some of his more irrational fans. Yeah. And while we have not gotten anything approaching the Major Applewhite Chris Sims era in terms of division, one thing I always did was really make fun of the Major Applewhite devotees. And they would always respond, how dare you attack Major? And I would always come back, I'm not attacking Major Applewhite. I like him. I'm attacking you. And I feel like that with some of the Casey Thompson people. It's not as bad. And I think most of them have gotten a little more clear-eyed about Casey's true ability level. Even, you know, hand injury notwithstanding. I wish him well. It does bring some clarity to the locker room, but let's not pretend that this guy is, you know, the ultimate team first Longhorn. Every time he's gotten bad news about his potential at the university, he's threatened to transfer.
Yeah, he has. And I don't think his dad helps out either.
I think that's a big part of it, to be honest.
Right. We can leave it there. You and I probably, we could get into that a little bit more. There's no reason to, because I like Casey Thompson a lot. And you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it was like going back to the Major Sims deal. You know, tribalism is such a big issue with this country. And we see it politically. We see it with everything now. And everything's binary. I mean, the whole cat or dog thing. What are you, fucking nine? Like, what's wrong with you? And if you're for Texas and you just want to root for Texas, I don't care what it is. And then you get racial stuff thrown in there and all of a sudden accusations of, well, you don't want the black guy. Or what? What do you? Stop. We need to start being adults. And let's try and do that as Texas fans together and stop burying each other over bullshit. Sorry.
That's a clap. Good job, Kevin. I'm with you. And the thing that irritates me, and we'll talk about this more in the offseason, is one of the best things about sports and certain kinds of team sports is it brings you together with people that aren't like you.
Yes, it's one of the best things about it, and it's actually historically in I love history. Damn, you probably know more history than anyone I know. Look at what sports has done for this country with that.
Yes. And for you to realize, I mean, look, so you grew up at Westlake, right?
Yep.
You saw your first black person when you were 14 years old, probably, right?
My parents got divorced and I lived in South Austin half the time, so.
So you saw your first Mexican person when you were 12.
I've got a couple South Austin buddies who happen to be Mexican. I'll give the George Carlin thing. They don't happen to be Mexican. Two Mexicans had sex and had a kid. They don't happen to be Mexican. They're Mexican, and there's nothing wrong with that. No, it was actually 11.
All right. I'm trying to make a serious point, and all joking aside. You know, I grew up in Northwest Austin, right? And it was, it's portrayed, I think, as lily white. It actually wasn't. You know, I actually grew up in a block where you sort of had a family that represented a thing. So we had a group of Russian Jewish emigres who'd fled the Soviet Union. We had a family that was a mixture of Panamanian and Venezuelan, which was awesome. Their arguments were amazing out on the street. We had the black family, right? And my sister used to babysit their daughters, the Williams, awesome people. We had the super religious family. We had the kind of divorced family that, you know, things were always in turmoil at the house. We had everything. There was sort of a thing, but in aggregate, it was pretty white, upper middle class, right?
Yeah.
And then I went to public school and I got bussed and I went to a junior high, predominantly black. I was the minority. And you know what? I had a blast. And you know what? All the guys I played football with, they were exactly like me.
Mm-hmm.
We were the same. We were insecure about the same things. We all thought the same things were funny. We all were irritated about the coach doing X, it was the biggest barrier destroyer possible.
Yeah.
And it happened so quickly because we all had a common goal and we were all on the same team.
Right.
Simply by putting on a jersey that was the same color, everything else didn't matter because we were teammates.
Yeah.
And that is the beauty of sports. And one thing that I really resent about the current culture is lying about that, is lying about how cool and how special that can be and what you can build out of that, because you can build real friendships from people who grew up totally different from you simply by going and sharing the same locker room, working hard together, sharing a common goal. This happens for a lot of people in the military, right? But for a lot of us who don't join the military, it happens to us in high school sports and junior high sports. And it's invaluable. And you have this sort of need by some people to try to inject these other issues into that locker room where that's not what's happening, because we're there and we know how people interact with each other. And I'm just tired of it. And there's a larger thing of trying to destroy sort of the meritocracy of sports, which is, look, end of the day, the better guy is going to play 9 times out of 10. And that is a great thing because it tells you that the harder worker, the more talented person is going to get the job. And you have to square yourself with that and say, okay, well, that's how it is. That's the way the cookie crumbles. And we have people trying to actively engineer our society and in the sports locker room and elsewhere saying that, no, it's not about that. And that has to change. I don't like it. It's intruding on sports, but I think it's intruding in other areas of our culture. And I don't like the lie and that's being told that sports as one of the greatest barrier destroyers that you can find in terms of how people feel about each other.
Man, it breaks those barriers quickly. That's well said, Paul. And you realize that you got a lot more in common than maybe some of the differences you may have. It does explain why you didn't shower after practice, though.
You know what? we did shower. I went to Keeling Junior High, which if in today's more gentrified Austin, that may not mean as much. But when I was there in Rosewood Park, that was the center of the crack trade. That was the center of prostitution along with South Congress, which is also hilarious to think about. Right. Remember when South Congress was the height of that's where you'd go pick up a streetwalker.
Yes. So there was only the only Popeyes that I knew of was off of South First. Right.
Yep.
And so anytime we were going to go get Popeyes, I was like, Dad, can I go with you? And we would go, and then I would ask him to drive down South Congress because I used to love as a kid just to see prostitutes walking around.
You know? Yeah, well, I remember distinctly after football because you go to, you know, for junior high, we went to once the seasons change, right, and daylight savings time comes in the late part of the fall of the football season. When you shower up after football practice and go get on the bus to take you back home, you know, we were bused probably like 40-minute bus ride. The streetwalkers are out. It's dark. And there's dudes working the corner. And we saw a dude get beaten with a pipe for trying to snatch and grab from a poker game. And we saw the streetwalkers, and they would see us in the bus windows. And we're eighth-grade boys, so we're yelling out, like, show us your tits or whatever. And they would comply and laugh, and you know, and we'd be like, I'm going crazy. And you know, of course, I'd tell my parents these stories, and they just, you know, my dad would laugh his ass off, and my mom would be horrified. But you know, it was an education for me. But the great thing about it is the realization, like, we were exactly the same.
Yeah,
we were a bunch of 13-year-olds insecure about girls. We all wanted to look cool. They introduced us to rap, which was the apogee of rap. Like, it was really when rap was sort of coming out, and we introduced them to, you know, like, heavy metal and the Beastie Boys, who they refused to listen to, but then we got them listening to them and they actually ended up liking them. So, you know, just, we had so much more in common than different. And there's a lot of people that will tell you that we're all more different than what we have in common. And the minute you play sports, particularly a team sport in a public school, you realize all that stuff's bullshit. And it's just your teammates, and those are your friends, and those things all happen organically. And if you leave kids alone, particularly, they almost always sort it out.
It's the whole sandbox thing. I mean, you got young kids, they just play in a sandbox. And you see that globally, too, if you travel the world at all, that it breaks those barriers as well, that it's like, oh my God, you know, this Spanish guy and I have a lot more in common than I would have thought of as a kid. It's one thing that I loved, you know, growing up, the idea was, and this was national, that don't focus on race. And now we've turned it to where we're trying to focus on race. I think it's a bad lesson to teach kids. Hey, let me tell you about David McClellan. David is an awesome guy. He will work with anyone, and he can help anyone. He's a fiduciary financial advisor. He's from Forum Financial. He specializes in retirement planning and then also just financial life coaching. So he's going to see where you're at and see what he can do for you and really give you or start to work on that financial freedom number. That's going to change everything for you. That's a true life changer and a game changer. Get in touch with him. He's just a really good guy and a really smart guy and damn good at what he does. He's going to help you out. Trust us. And it's a free consultation if you mention EGAT, 312-933-8823, 312-933-8823, or D. McClellan at forumfin.com. All right, buddy, we're like at 105 here. Anything else here?
No, I do want to say that I did talk to David recently about the hippo race, which I proposed.
Yeah.
He believes that he is not interested in that, and that this is, in fact, proof that he is a smart financial mind who can mitigate risk and understand true cost benefits.
I believe I called that.
We did debate about whether hippos are crocodile fast. Like, are they just straight line fast in the water, or do they got a little wiggle to them? I don't think they got a lot of wiggle, but you know, sometimes a big man can surprise you.
We'll talk to y'all next week.
Wearing natural, that's good, man. You know, I wish more of the young children today would wear their hair natural like Dr. Martin Luther King did. That's right. You ain't never seen Dr. Martin Luther King with no mess of Jerry Curl on his head. Ain't that right?
Amen.
Dr. King ain't come walk around like that. You know, sweet, I met Dr. Martin Luther King once.
And you lying. You ain't never met Dr. Martin Luther King.
Yeah, I met Dr. Martin Luther King in 1962 in Memphis, Tennessee. I walk down the street, minding my own business, just walking off, feeling good. I walk around the corner, man woke up, hit me in my chest, right? I fall on the ground, right? And I look up, and Dr. Martin Luther King, I said, Dr. King. He said, oops, I thought you were somebody else.
Oh, man, you lying. You ain't never met Martin Luther King.
Knocked the wind out of me. Yes, he did.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
No, he did not.